You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan, and it's awesome to be with you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you find this time helpful and meaningful and valuable to you as you drive to the job or go to the gym or work in the yard, whatever it is you're doing right now. Thanks for always taking time to include us as part of your day. I hope that that means that we do not crappy work and you actually find value in the people that we bring on, which is awesome. So today, I'm going to introduce you to Thomas Matheson. Now, Tommy, you may or may not know, he runs a company called Tommy Cool Air. They're based in Corpus Christi, Texas. He founded the business like almost 10 years ago. And we're going to be talking about a lot of the iteration of changes that he's gone through. His mission in life is happiness. And professionally, that means keeping people cool. So that's a really big thing. We're going to be talking a lot about his background, how he landed in the trades. We're going to be talking about brief issue he had where he was trying to absentee run the business and have a GM run it and how that kind of fell apart and how they've gone through a rebrand and kind of what this means moving forward. There's a lot that we're going to be talking about, but there's a couple points in here. He's going to talk about some of the lessons he learned the hard way. I want you to pay attention to, but I'm going to shut up because you don't care what I have to say. Let's introduce you to Thomas. All right, Thomas, I have been looking forward to getting you on the show for a minute. So glad you're able to join us from sunny Texas. But for those who maybe don't yet know who you are, can we just start there? Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. Hey, thanks. I appreciate it 100%. My name's Thomas Matheson. I've owned an air conditioning company since like 2014. It was called Tiger Heating and Air. We recently went through a rebrand last year to Tommy Cool Air. So really looking to, well, here's the truth of it. I have three daughters, 30, 28, and a Rewind Scarlett, 12. So I got one more to get through college. Can't retire yet. So I'm like, let's throw some money at this. Let's really work on our systems and our processes, get the new brand going on, do a bunch of radio advertising, hook up with the Wizard of Ads, and see what we can do to really get some real growth in the next 5 or 6 years.
I love how you're like, I got someone else to pay for through school, so let's work on a business, because that sounds easy to do. And also, quick plug for Wizard of Ads. They do consistently great work. Like, Ryan Shute and his team are fantastic. So really cool that you partnered up with them. What is your story? Did you grow up in the trades, or why did you find yourself sitting in this role or in this chair, perhaps, or in this industry starting back in 2014?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, I owned a company before this that we got out of. But when I went to college, my best friend in life at the time, he got a job in an air conditioning company. And so at some point he said, hey, they need a smart guy, wire fire guy. I'm like, look, I'm in school. I can't do that. He goes, no, like part-time. So I kind of cut my teeth on this industry early on. And then when I got out of school with a business degree, it's like, what am I going to do with my life, you know? I went to work for a refinery for about 10 years and started. I found out, the state test for Texas is open book. I can do that. So in 94, I went and got my state test, started doing stuff for people on the side. Eventually left the refinery and started a company that sold, opened up against Tiger in 2014, and let a general manager run it. And I kind of went off and did triathlons and things like that. And it kind of got run into the ground a little bit. So I came back in to take it over. And then we joined CEO Warrior. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that trade group.
Yeah, good group.
Yeah, they, they got this nice little belt here behind me. Hopefully I get to add a lot more. But,
yeah, and we've had Scott on the show just a few weeks ago. Okay. So, yeah, he's a really, really sharp guy.
So for systems and processes, you know, ready to go, plug and play, they were great. But they introduced me to Ryan with the Wizard of Ads and a couple other marketing companies. Think about the rebrand. And Ryan just blew me away, his emotional connection with people. And really, all the radio advertising we're doing, there's no plug, there's no sale in the pitch in the radio. It's just about my story, which a lot of it has to do with the snake bite, right? That got my finger in 2014. This is a hand that I've hid all my life, just because, I mean, since 2014, because that was not a proud moment, you know. But he said, hey, let's capitalize on that weakness and show people if you're human. And, you know, it's really been eye-opening since we've working on the marketing branding, just how we reach people, even our internal customers, our employees, everybody's just bought in. So this ball is rolling. We're 6 months into advertising this rebrand. So I'm just extremely excited, and I know it's going to work, and we're going to grow like crazy, and I'm just excited to do that.
So there's so much stuff you just ran through there that's kind of worth packing down. So I'm going to try to go back to the beginning, I think, and work forward, because a lot of guys land in the trades because they grew up in the trades. Somebody saw them and like, hey, I see some potential in you. Come work for me. And they kind of learn the skill. And as a result of them kind of being a part of like being a tech, being installer, whatever their particular industry line is, they start building into a business and then find themselves in a management role or an ownership role or a, and then they realize that I don't know the business, right? It's like this whole e-myth thing of running a bakery is very different than knowing how to bake. And you're kind of interesting because your background actually kind of did the opposite. So you had exposure to the trades, but you went to business school, you kind of went into another industry. To what degree did learning kind of, for lack of a better term, like a traditional academic business framework, and then being exposed to an entirely other industry in the refinery world, to what degree do you feel like that gave you skills and tools in your tool belt that are uncommon for the trades?
Yeah. So I think I've always been a fairly smart guy. I think I have a lot of common sense. I'm not sure that anything I learned in college really was impactful in the real world, right? But, you know, cutting my teeth in this industry and learning about this early on in my life, you know, right out of high school into college, that was nice. And it made me appreciate that, hey, there's an opportunity here because, you know, I went to school in Houston, where you're from, and man, it was just as hot here in Corpus. And I realized early on that people need air conditioning. And so when there came an opportunity for me to break from the refinery, I had this business kind of role. It's like, let's just throw all the marbles there to my wife. And she agreed because we could always come back and get a job anywhere in the world working for a hydrocracker, which I love working with a refinery. And a lot of those systems and processes there are similar, right? You know, I remember when I first started the business, you know, getting a letter from the IRS, I forgot to file taxes. All these things that you don't appreciate on the business side that are so separate from running a truck, doing an install, running a service call or a meeting. Yeah. So it's just a process of growing and learning and taking your licks along the way. But it's definitely worth it.
Well, you mentioned the licks, cause that's another interesting idea that I want to dig into. So yeah, you have like the traditional learning environment of academia, which it sounds like me, you found that after you got out of undergrad, you kind of had to unlearn a bunch of those things. It wasn't super helpful going into the real world.
Right.
It for some people it is, right? Like I wouldn't want to trust a doctor without a basic 4-year degree, right? There's some fields where it totally makes sense, but for a lot, it doesn't. But learning through licks in the school of hard knocks, you mentioned that kind of the first iteration of the business, you found yourself like doing tries and like going out and doing that, which by the way, you're insane for thinking that that's fun. What did you learn as a result of like leading or owning remotely a business while you were kind of like using it to cash fund your lifestyle?
Yeah.
And then trying to see remote management as like, hey, the lack of systems, the lack of health in the business. Like what was that learning experience like for you seeing it go bad?
Yeah, it was rough because pretty much I found the guy that run the company was a yes man. So for instance, if I remember I was putting out fires once I realized that I need to let him go, I was putting all those fires out. So he might go install a system for you and or sell a system to you and might do a great job, right? But on the way out the door, he'd see this rusty return arrow grill and be like, you know, we need to replace that. I'm going to get one of those for you and bring it to you. And of course, he never followed up on that. Mm. Or he'd get your sale by, if he was selling something, by promising maintenance, pre-maintenance for life. I found a lot of these out afterwards. Basically, I found out, you know, I didn't have the right systems and processes and controls and checks in place to turn the business over to somebody and expect it to thrive and grow. And it didn't. And
how big was the business at that time?
We were probably a million, 800,000 or 900,000.
That's interesting. Do you feel like, and I'm curious, like, as you look back, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, right? Like, knowing what you know now, do you feel like the business at that size was big enough to cash flow like an absentee owner? I'm not trying to knock it, right? But no. You're largely removed from the business of the day to day. Do you feel like the business was big enough at that point to actually cash flow the right people and the right seats doing the right processes?
No, definitely not. You know, looking back, you know, I guess hindsight is always 20/20, and it always will be, you know. I perceive where I'm going to be in 5 years and think, man, I should have done this or should have done that. For me, though, I don't want to say I'm a man of action like James Bond or something like that, you know, but I am a man of action in the sense that I'm not going to sit still and not try and accomplish something on the daily, whether it was doing my triathlons or focusing. Now my focus is really turned towards Tommy Cool Air and making it successful, both internally and externally. Systems and processes and people, and getting my team on board and firing them up. And I just see when all those pieces come together, just really great growth. Already we're seeing it, and we're just kind of knocking at the door of this rebrand. So looking back, yeah, I should have, you know, it was not a good move. Obviously it wasn't successful, but it's a learning lesson and something that, like I say, we all have to take those licks and grow from our mistakes.
Yeah. It's like something we say internally. I'm sure other people say something similar, like this idea of like, you either win or you learn. Like those are the two outcomes. As long as you do one of those two, like you can't lose. Right.
Yeah. As long as you're moving forward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reality. And a lot of people like are resistant to learning, but that's a whole other topic.
Right.
How, so you join CEO Warrior, you start getting like access to like almost drag and drop sort of SOPs you can implement. Why did you start thinking about, hey, we should rebrand, and why that might be strategically something that you started considering and moving forward with?
Well, at CEO Warrior, there was a company that was in the process of a rebrand, and the people at CEO Warrior were really involved in helping him redesign that rebrand, even though they were just business owners themselves. So I appreciated that. That got me to thinking, and that's when I met with Ryan and his main creator, Matthew, who still works on my campaign on the daily. But when I started visiting with them, I realized, man, you know, just reading some of the books and talking to Ryan, how they connect emotionally, they did with me, and that's what we're doing with our customers. I just saw this huge potential. And like I said, I could either keep with this company that really had no brand, no clear identity, and enjoy slow growth, or, you know, embrace the suck, as they say. I hope we can say that on there.
And whatever you want.
And, you know, we chunked $250,000 out of rebrand last year in van wrap and just money invested in the brand and the website and all these different things, you know. And so, well, that's a one-time expense, right? So I'm sold. I have been sold. I'm convinced from the beginning. My wife's a little bit different story. You know, she's like, you're going to bankrupt the company. We're going to lose all our customers, you know, and slowly she's coming around as she sees the response we get. It has been so long since I've been in a customer's home, and they don't act like they know who I am already. Mm. Just from listening to my stories on the radio. And it's made sales easier, relationships easier. I mean, they were easy before, but now it's like they're buying from somebody they know. And so we're more the first in the door and the last that they're talking to. So
did you ever read Donald Miller's Building a Story Brand?
No, I haven't read that.
Yeah. So it's funny because it's interesting. Some of the ideas you're talking about is stuff that Donald Miller talks about. And Donald Miller, for those who don't know, he's how would I describe him? I first was introduced to him when he was an author in the book. It was like early 2000s. It was Blue Like Jazz, but he's kind of got into like business messaging and communication. Long story short, but he advocates a lot for the value of story, which I know Ryan and Wizard of Ads also advocate for. And the idea is if you talk like pull back the curtain, it's for thousands and thousands of years, human beings have communicated primarily by story first, right? At one point, you're like, you're sitting in a cave around a fire, drawing drawings of your hunt. But when you talk about your experiences, say again. Yeah. Like that's totally like we just talk in story, right? Yeah. We don't talk in facts. We talk in narrative, and there's a beginning and there's an end and there's a protagonist and an antagonist and like you're overcoming adversity. But there's this idea of like empathy that builds of having somebody root for you and pull for you and trust you. It's really fascinating. Ryan has a book that's worth picking up about this. Donald Miller has a book, The Building a Story Brand. Was that a difficult sort of concept to teach your team about the idea of like leveraging story, about relating to these personal sort of connections, not a salesy thing, but it's all about trust and empathy. Was that a hard thing to transition and turn that corner on?
Well, I've had to let a couple of people go who just weren't bought in. Right?
They couldn't turn the corner. Yeah.
So, I think it's always a scary thing when you're, telling your story because number one, who really wants to hear this? It's not all that interesting. It's just my life. You know, there have been some unique things that have happened to me that Ryan and Matthew were good in their initial uncovery process here at the shop, digging out of me and then creating this brand and this story around it. And getting, thinking first, can I get the guys to buy into this? You know, if the guys are going to laugh at this or think it's stupid, from the logo design, and that took forever, and then the one that I picked, but the guys weren't like that. They were open and receptive. And like I say, it was just my wife who was not, but she's coming on board. But the public itself, so that was a bright spot for me. I thought, well, if these hard-nosed guys, techs and installers, if they can be open and accept. Now they enjoy the notoriety as much as me, and stop and taking pictures of, we got an eyeglass campaign now, or Tommy Cool sunglasses, advertising on the radio. We get people flagging us down to pull over, every install or sales call, people want some of the glasses, so people put them on and take pictures with the guys next to the van. It's really,
oh, that's awesome.
Get involved in it. It's like, okay, people do kind of want to hear my story a little bit,
And I think
turn that into an income. Okay. That's even better.
No, yeah, totally. And I think to your point, and you went through this, I think people feel like their story is insignificant. It's not important. It's nothing special. And that's kind of true, I guess, for you. Right? Like if that's your story, you're like, I see this every day. There's nothing remarkable here. It's not as cool as so-and-so's story. Yeah. I don't have the trials and tribulations that this other person had. But for somebody, your story is compelling and your story is relatable. It doesn't have to be for everyone, but for your target customer base, having a really clearly defined story is really, really powerful, even if you're so familiar with it, it feels unremarkable.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something about the storytelling. Our life is a story. I mean, that's what spoke to me so much in dealing with erisitive ads, how they convert your brand into your story. So for anybody out there who's thinking about, how they should approach the market, this works really well for us. And people are interested. They want to hear the story. They're connected to it. Even people who get tired of hearing the radio ads, we had a guy, one of the guys sold a $23,000 system to a guy in Rockstown, which is typically not a high-end town, right? And the guy said, I'll just let you know, and you can tell your boss this, I hate those radio commercials. He said, well, let me clarify. I like the new one at the beginning of the month, but once I've heard it 20 times, I just have to turn the channel immediately. But you guys are out here today, and you're the only company I called. So anyway, it's whether they love you or hate you, they're hearing it. And if your story pops first in their mind when their AC breaks, yes.
All that matters. One of the things that I think is interesting is because a lot of people give up on building a brand or a jingle or a slogan right when it actually starts becoming effective, right? Because when you're inside and when you're drinking the Kool-Aid, you see it all the time. You see the colors all the time. Like in your case, you see the cool guy glasses all the time. You hear, like you just hear it all the time. For most customers, that's not true. That's not their reality. And the data is a little bit skewed on this, but there's a lot of research that says somebody has to see or hear something 7 times before they notice it once.
Yeah. Right?
Which means, think about a McDonald's jingle, that ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Like, you got to hear that over and over and over and over and over for years.
Yeah.
To have McDonald's be a top of mind fast food hamburger joint, and not say Wendy's. Not knocking Wendy's or any other fast food place, but the idea is that McDonald's invests heavily in the impressions and repetition and getting that out there. And if McDonald's was to pull back as soon as the executives or the marketing team got tired of the jingle, it would never have the weight and the traction that ba-ba-ba has. And so many guys quit right when it starts getting effective. They want to change it up. They're like, oh, let's try something new. But to be diligent and persistent and steady, not with the values and not even like the very core message, right? But to be that consistent over time is really where that traction pays off. And I'm really proud of you and your team for getting that kind of built in. Even your customers, and they're like, okay, I turned this off after a few times. So, hey, here you are installing this today. So kudos.
And they still ask for glasses, by the way. So, or hats.
Yeah, whatever. They just want something to identify with, which is so cool. It's so cool. If somebody's listening to this story and maybe they're where you are, like they feel like the business isn't quite growing, they feel like they're spending a lot of time, effort, energy, and things just aren't right. Maybe they're absentee owners doing tries also. But the point is, they don't know the next step to take, right? For you, you're fortunate that you found CEO Warrior and they introduced you to a variety of inputs, including like SOPs and people like Wizard of Ads to help bring these things to life and take you to the next level. Yeah. What would you say to people who are struggling to get to where you are now?
Well, you know, CEO Warrior is a big investment. You go to their initial meeting and you're just wowed by the people around you and success stories and the speakers. It's amazing. That kind of opened my eyes to what was possible, and talking to a half a dozen people who had been through the process and made that investment in themselves to grow. And that's what I think it really takes, is we don't know. It doesn't matter if we have a business degree or a doctorate or whatever. Sometimes we don't know what it takes to really succeed in business. But that information is out there. And mostly you have to be willing to invest in yourself and your company. And that is time and that is money. But once you do that and you see that coming back to you, whether you're investing in some trade organization that gives you some processes and systems that you can immediately pop into place, you still got to enforce them, you know, get your guys to buy in. And it's just a process. And, you know, we all doubt ourselves. I've never really doubted myself, but I'm like, I know I could be doing better than this. What do I need to do? You know, I don't ever strive to come in last in a triathlon or be the worst AC company in Corpus Christi. I'm going to be the top of mind, who people think about most of the time. You know, that's our goal and our painted vision. So keep investing in yourself. Find these trade organizations if you don't have systems and processes in place. And if your brand stinks, if it just stinks, like mine did, you know, it was Tiger, and there's a Tiger in San Antonio. You know, there's Tony. Some people reprinted some shirts wrong for me one time, and they left off the Tiger heating and air. It was just our old Tiger logo blown up. They just did that really big. And so I would wear that shirt sometimes because it was a cool looking logo, but people would ask me if I was Tony. Like Tony the Tiger, I worked for Exxon, or was a football coach for LSU, or we have a local team here, the high school, the Carroll Tigers. And so do you coach football for Carroll? So I realized our brand is kind of watered down. So if that's where you find yourself, you got to find something that sets you apart as unique and then just roll with it.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think the other thing I'd probably add on there, I don't know if you'd agree with this, is to follow through. Because I think a lot of people like to move things around. They like to change things. Like, hey, here's a flavor of the month. It really does take, I would argue, the guys who have really, really great success have an insane amount of discipline to keep their focus narrow on just getting those things dialed in. They don't bounce around. They don't like one day they're into it. The next day they're onto the next flavor. Right. It's like they are laser focused on doing the small things well, consistently over time. And that's difficult on its own to be so laser focused on getting that, whatever that thing is, like dialed in. It's hard in my experience.
There is a path to operational excellence. You just have to get on that path. And to your point, stay on it, monitor it daily, build your team up daily. You got to have ways in to check that things are still going properly, you know? And like say, be consistent with your efforts.
Yeah.
And that's not just for a day or a week or a month. Maybe it'll take years, but when you find something that works, stick with it, measure it, and implement it.
Yeah, that's really good. The one thing that about this that I really think is interesting is like you're kind of dancing around it. It's this idea of people always think like that you rise to your goals, like you set a goal magically, you rise to that. I think the expression is you don't rise to your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. And so I think it's interesting because you're literally putting systems in place to help you get your goals. So now your systems is what's going to help you get there, right? If that's internal ops or CSM or whatever the sales process that you're using is, like those systems is what's help you reach the goals, not the goals themselves.
Absolutely. I wish it was all internal and I could be the master of my own destiny, but I rely on Service Titan and CEO Warrior, the Wizard of Ads, and all these other things to get there.
I mean, you know what? We've mentioned Wizard of Ads enough. I'm going to take a picture. I've never done this before, so this is fun to do it while recording. Hey, smile. I'm going to send this to Ryan. Ryan, dude, you're a good dude. You do great work. And what you've done with Tommy Coolair is awesome. Fantastic stuff. So, Thomas, if people want to reach out to you, connect, pick your brain, even stop by Corpus when they're checking out the Texas Gulf Coast, what's the best way for somebody to reach out to you to connect?
So the easiest thing would be Tommy@TommyCool.com or go to TommyCool.com and there'll be a link there to email me or call me. If you want to reach out and talk business or what's worked for me and maybe you can implement it, you're welcome to reach out via email. And then I'll be glad to give you my personal cell phone number. If you're a business owner and looking to grow and need some input or like say, dig a little bit deeper, I'm happy to talk to anybody and help however I can.
Dude, super proud of the success you're having and cool to know more about the story behind Tommy Coolair. Thanks for stopping by, man. I cannot wait to see what the future holds in store for you. Keep going, man. You're doing great stuff.
Check on me in 3 years, brother.
I will. I totally will.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.